Yeah, we can begin. Welcome everyone. So I can go around, we can do introductions. I think we all know each other, but we'll go through pro forma. Kat.
At Coach Gear, Council Staff.
Hi, Kat. Jesus, welcome back.
Thank you, Jesus Guillen, Council Member at the C.
Derek.
Hey, I'm Derek Mapp, member,
Hi,
Cuffs.
Derek. Hi, Kira. Kira.
Hi, everyone. Kara, Council Staff.
Stephen.
Steven Spano, the HCAP Staff Attorney at the AIDS Legal Referral Panel.
Hi, Stephen. Lee, good to see you. Unmute so we can hear you too.
Oh, there might be audio issues.
Yeah, we can't hear you, Lee.
Because I don't. Oh.
Is that on your end, Lee? You're unmuted. Maybe some audio stuff.
I can hear everyone except Lee.
All right. Well, Lee is here.
Yeah. Thanks, Lee. All right. So we can continue if you want to put up today's draft agenda for a review and approval. So yeah, this looks pretty much, we have Stephen's HCAP report. We're going to do a COLA update, needs assessment update. And that's about it today. So we'll look at the COLA and the needs after we hear from Stephen. Anyone see anything they want to talk about or amend? Okay. That's approved. Today's agenda is approved. How about last month's minutes?
I do want to highlight that we did have co-chair elections
Yeah, we did.
last
And
month.
I'd like to thank Derek for his service previously. Thank you, Derek. And new chair, along with myself, is Franco.
Yeah,
Thanks,
unfortunately,
everyone.
Derek's been dethroned.
Yeah, Derek, thank you for your service. Yeah, so everything looked good. Okay, anyone have anything they'd like to amend or add? Last month's minutes? Okay, that's approved. Let's move on. Any announcements? Stephen.
I have one. Unfortunately, I got hit with a number of things today that are going to take my attention. So I'm going to have to leave right after I do my report, if that's all right.
Thank you, Stephen. That's fine. Any other announcements? Okay, without further ado, Stephen, a public comment? No. Stephen, you're ready to go.
Thank you. Good to see everybody. The report this year is, or sorry, for this month is actually quite short. I closed out a number of cases in the last at the end of the year last year. I'll point to one or two here that I think are worthy of discussion, and then of course be available for any questions regarding them or others. The first that I'll talk about is. Actually, both of them are on the last page of the report. I'll start with 2024-85. This is a residential substance use service case. This is the reason I want to highlight this is because I do think it's important. We have some amazing service providers. On occasion, there will be an instance where in some effort to move a client forward in their process, their housing becomes a little bit weaponized. And so I push back on that in a lot of ways, right? I don't know that, somebody who is struggling with sobriety or substance use issues or any kind of program that they're working is benefited by having their housing put in jeopardy. In this instance, it doesn't appear the housing is actually jeopardized. But what is most disturbing is that there was kind of the conversation was brought up, and now I'm having trouble hearing back from the service provider. So for me, it's a little bit sticky when a service provider is raising an issue and then not following through on that issue. It one has to wonder why was it raised to begin with? Why would you know, somebody who is a vulnerable person, why would you put them in this position where they need to defend themselves and then not even show up for the fight? So not that it's a fight, but anyway, I raised that. We're still in the middle of the process. There were some very legitimate reasons why it's been delayed, but right now I have a client who's very concerned about their housing stability, and it doesn't seem to be a priority for the service provider. So I will update as that progresses. As I said, there are some legitimate reasons for the delay. I'm not taking that away, but right now I'm kind of at a loss of how to proceed without hearing back from them. The next one below I highlight because, you know, dental services continue to be a major need for people living with HIV. In this instance, the client was referred to oral surgery because they have some pretty serious stuff that they need done in their mouth. But the soonest that they can get in is in May for to have a tooth yanked, and actually they need two teeth extracted. And in the meantime, they've already been treated for an infection in their mouth on two different occasions with antibiotics. So I feel like it's only bound to continue happening until May, and I'm having a lot of trouble trying to move. At a point, you know, get this client an earlier appointment. I just got my hands on it this week, so I'm trying to do my best to move quickly and try to get the client the support they need, but that's where we're at right now. And with that, I will turn it over to you all for any questions, or if you need any elaboration, I'm happy to provide some. And I can't see anybody's hands because I'm on my phone. I apologize.
I'm checking, Steve. Steven, anyone have anything for Steven?
Can I just say something first? Thank you, Stephen, for everything that you do all the time. Just a really fast question, and I know that it can be a long answer, but with all the new political and social environment, are you guys started to feel that you're gonna need maybe more help, or you already started to have more clients? What's your fast answer to that?
Well, ALRP has taken some steps to not only train our own staff, but we'll also be providing trainings to other service providers on how to manage ICE and DHS and any kind of agents that might show up for potential raids or whatever, any targeted kind of efforts by agencies, government agencies. We have looped in the support of our referral panel as well. Recently, we had, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, we did a really big push just prior to the inauguration to get as many asylum cases filed for people living with HIV as we could before the 20th. I think we were able to file six asylum cases. We spoke with many other people, but their cases were not ripe to be filed, so we weren't able to do that. But you know, we're leveraging. You know, we're always trying to increase capacity. We are. You know, we don't ever have a wait list. There's on occasion we're at a standstill with eviction cases. We just simply can't manage that all of those cases. But there's always other agencies to support. Right now, we're taking it one day at a time. This is not the first time we've dealt with this. You know, we had Bill at the helm the last time. Matt is doing a great job. There's nothing we can do about, you know, these kind of external, you know, federal forces, other than follow the guidance that we're provided by our city government partners and, you know, using our own best judgment from the standpoint of being attorneys. I don't know if that answers your question. We don't have any pressing needs to increase capacity right now. We've all been able to handle it, but I have seen an uptick in intakes just this last week. And certainly, people people are on edge, and it's not just clients, it's us as well, right? All of our funding is, the future is murky at best right now, so, you know, we're just doing the best we can to support while we can.
Thank you, Stephen.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Stephen, this is Derek. Thanks for all your work, as always. I want to stay with the immigration issue for one reason only. I recently met with a long-term client of mine who often disappears because of his immigration issue. And he's been quite stable for a little bit. He doesn't have, he's not the usual sort of face of people who have immigration issues, at least popularly. But he's been a long, like he's been past his visa for decades. And I've been trying to convince him that it'd be worthwhile to still apply, not for asylum, but for just his green card or a permanent alien card. Is there any idea or is there any talk about those sets of folks?
So if I'm understanding correctly, you're talking about a category of people who are not necessarily, they're not in deportation hearings. They're not in deportation, in the deportation process right now, but they have an opportunity to further their immigration status, moving closer to citizenship. And you're wondering, do we have kind of a prescribed mechanism to do that? Are we advising people to move forward in that process right now?
Right. Exactly. What is much more the guidance around that sort of thing? Like,
so
he needs to get legal, definitely. But yeah.
So, you know, it's so far outside of my practice area. I know, you know, I think I can manage a conversation with ICE if they show up. But as far as guiding a person through that process, there are two other attorneys in our office that are much better prepared to provide that. That my understanding is it is very case to case basis. It is going to depend on the individual. It's also going to depend on their ability to follow through to a certain extent, because the process is a long one. It's a lengthy one, and it requires some upkeep and some maintenance. So my advice would be to have the client contact us. There is no risk in that. All of the information that's shared with us as their attorney will be confidential and privileged, you know, as attorney-client, you know, communications. And therein, they can kind of get the best advice on whether it makes sense to proceed in the process, move forward in the process, or, you know, continue as they have been. I honestly don't know what the outlook is. Like, I haven't had a really great conversation with Anna or Slater about what the future of immigration. Like, I don't know if waiting out the current administration is even an option, right? I don't know how solid the changes are, how permanent the changes to the immigration policy are. My understanding is it's been through a series of executive orders which would end with a new president, presumably, unless that new president is our vice president, right? So I don't know how important it is, you know, I don't know how permanent all of these changes are, or how you know, those attorneys are advising their clients. I would like to know more, but my own capacity is a little bit limited, and I have to rely on them for kind of one-off questions and stuff. But what I can say for certain is there is no harm in that client coming to our office and having a conversation with Anna and Slater. And the best way to do that would be to set an appointment. And of course, as always, I am happy to help in that process.
That was helpful. Thanks.
Of course. Yeah. It's not very helpful, but it's as helpful as I can be. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Stephen. Anything else for Stephen? All right, Stephen, thank you.
All right, thank you all as always. I'm sorry I have to go, but enjoy the rest of the meeting and have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Bye, Stephen.
Bye now.
Okay, it looks like we're going to a COLA update.
Yeah, and I actually can just combine these two, so I can do both the COLA and assessment as one update. Because the COLA is a very short one. Again, we're still outreaching. It has been we have had continual barriers in terms of outreaching because we just don't hear back from people. So that is still ongoing, but we are hopeful. So hopefully we're kind of going down our short list now of possible organizations to reach out to. And so I'm still hopeful that we'll still be able to pull something from one of those. But yeah, I know that last meeting, it was kind of the same thing. And there were some council members that asked for the flyer. So we did send those out and they did get posted, as far as I'm aware. We have not heard from anyone in regards to those flyers. So that's unfortunate. But again, outreach is continual. Any questions about that before I move on to the needs assessment? All right. So for the needs assessment, we did discuss last month how it's kind of a two-step process. And so part of that process is going over the needs assessment survey. But before I get to that part, we did have the group wanted or expressed wanting us to kind of go back and review some of the previous surveys that we've done and conducted in the past few years, just to see if there's anything that we can pull out that would be considered relevant information, whether that's through findings or through recommendations, and see kind of what has changed, if anything, or any progress. And so anything that can be applied towards our current needs assessment target, which is people living with HIV over the age of 65. That is our current target now. And so both Kat and I did go over those. And so I'll go ahead and share my screen to kind of show folks what it is that we were able to pull from those surveys that we reviewed. So let me pull up my notes. And then before I go into this, actually, I do want to preface this by saying that we do know that there has been a lot of effort and progress since the last couple of years that has been made within HIV and aging. And so I do want to highlight kind of the needs assessment that Randy Al-Ghayr did. And so his is kind of, it was, I believe, 100 plus participants. So that was a really big scale needs assessment that had a lot of really important and useful information for HIV and aging, as well as the international online support group that Jesus actually put together. So I just wanted to highlight that effort and kind of highlight that progress that has been made within the last, maybe not recent, but like still very recent couple of years since we've been looking at this. So I'll go ahead and get started. Or any questions before that? This is one part of some of the things we're going to review. All right. So these are some notes that were taken, or some of our findings that we were able to pull out of the needs assessment and COLAs. And so we did review the last 5 years worth of needs assessment and COLAs. And so starting off with the 2023 COLA, that one was, the target population for that one was long-term survivors. And so we had a total of 5 participants that were between the ages of 55 and 64, and then 3 participants that were between the ages of 65 and 74. And this was a smaller COLA, so it was a total of 8 participants. And so a much smaller one than we normally would do. But some of the important topics that were talked about there was prime medical care. And that one was, and as you'll see through this, it is kind of a top of mind and highly talked about topic. Participants in that COLA specifically discussed that it was really hard for them to find age-appropriate medical care. And there was this fear of losing experienced HIV medical professionals. Then another talked about topic in this COLA was benefits, just that they were difficult to manage. And it was hard to ensure that they qualified each year if people were having to recertify biannually or annually. It was hard for some people to kind of stay on top of that. Mm. All right, moving on to our COLA or our needs assessment from 2024. So this was the one that we just recently did, which was the Black slash African American community. And we had 11 participants between the ages of 55 to 64, then 12 participants between the ages of 65 to 74, and one participant that was considered 75 or older. And when we were talking about service categories, again, primary medical care was a very highly talked about topic. And there were concerns specifically in this needs assessment around taking so many medications and the long-term effects of them, as well as frequent changes in medical providers that again were causing anxiety for participants. Housing was another topic, just that it was challenging to find safe and affordable housing for folks. Moving on to our needs assessment from 2023, which was the Latino-Latinx community. And so we had, I believe it was a little over 50 participants in this one. And so 20 plus participants were within that age bracket of 55 and 64 years old. We had less than 10 participants that were 65 to 74 years old, and then less than 5 participants that were 75 plus years old. But I do want to note that we had quite a few participants that were living with HIV for 10 to 20 years, and then even more, or more as well, living with HIV for 20 plus years. So a really good chunk from here. And when we were discussing service categories, again, primary medical care was a very talked about category. The topic of the fast turnover of medical staff, increasing anxiety for folks came up again. And then also feeling that doctors were focusing on treating one ailment rather than the full picture. And so I think some of the discussion there was also about parsing, you know, HIV related ailments versus just aging ailments. And then moving on to dental care, folks talked about the lack of affordable and quality dental care, the high cost of dental procedures, and then just general confusion around dental benefits and what is or isn't covered by insurance. All right, moving on to the needs assessment from 2022, which was the trans community. And so we did have about 40% of the participants in this needs assessment that were living with HIV for 20 plus years. So again, a really good chunk. And a really talked about this category in this discussion was medical care. Just calling out wanting a more cohesive and integrated system of care, and also highlighting once again the lack of knowledgeable and empathetic doctors. Folks did say that they felt that they were getting too many referrals and as well as too many prescribed medications. And then I wanna jump to the 2021 needs assessment, which was telehealth and remote care. This one was very different from our normal needs assessment, as this was a community forum in lieu of the needs assessment. So it was more of a discussion than it was a typical interview and sit-down survey. But I still felt that there were a lot of relevant topics that came up in this discussion that I feel like could impact our current needs assessment target. And so some of those issues were challenges with technology. So just highlighting that there is a learning curve to be able to learn how to use new technologies. Also the disparities in technology access or the ability to can make it difficult for folks to even access services. So when we're thinking about someone who is aging and living on a fixed income, thinking about, well, how do they even afford to pay for a laptop or an iPad so they can, you know, have access to Zoom or have access to these things that could possibly make it either, you know, easier for them to access, you know, their telehealth doctor appointments or their support groups that may be a Zoom. Another topic or another discussion point that was brought up was just the feeling of general isolation from folks. So just feeling isolated from their friends. This was specifically, this needs assessment was kind of also during the pandemic. So a lot of folks felt even more isolated, but I think that's still a really good point to bring up, especially with folks that maybe are suffering from ailments due to mobility. So their isolation really impacts folks. People did mention that group interventions they felt that group interventions were less effective via Zoom, and so that caused them to opt out of services. And then navigating limited availability of medical slash mental health services. So folks felt that it was difficult to access services during this period of high demand. They did emphasize that there was a gap in services for those accessing services via private insurance. And then kind of going back to that isolation point, just feeling less effective in a remote setting versus a traditional in-person setting. All right, and then this wasn't within the last 5 years, but we did want to kind of pull some things out of 2019 needs assessment because it specifically focused on people living with HIV who were 50 plus years. And so our current population, our target population that we agreed on was people living with HIV who are over the age of 65. But this was still, I feel like, because it was done in 2019, there possibly are people that have now aged out of that first age bracket there, that's 60 to 69 years old. And that was 45%. So that was a good chunk of people. We did have 5% of our participants that were 70 to 79 years old. And so we did have a lot of information that came out of this one, unsurprisingly. Medical care, again, was a really talked about topic. So folks shared that it was difficult to obtain durable medical equipment. They had difficulty separating their HIV-related symptoms and just their age-related symptoms. When talking about mental health care, folks said that it was hard to access consistent long-term mental health care. Folks also felt that support groups did help in aiding isolation, allowing them to participate in city life. So they really liked that aspect. But they did want to have access to more 50 plus age support groups in a more intimate setting. And they highlighted mobility challenges as a major contributing factor to isolation. So again, kind of that topic of isolation coming up. When talking about benefits and finance, yes, you can get this document, Derek. When talking about benefits and finance, a lot of the folks said that they had to worry about balancing the need to work, which I don't necessarily see that maybe being the issue if we're looking at people living with HIV over the age of 65, but still balancing, you know, their income with also their benefits that I can see maybe being a challenge. Moving on to housing, participants did note that housing was their biggest challenge, especially for those 50 plus years old. They highlighted the lack of affordable housing due to just not having severe enough needs, they felt. The fear of aging in San Francisco due to housing just being inappropriate for mobility issues, which I think can be a very real issue. And then the fear of evictions or just benefits no longer being adequate enough to afford the rising cost of living. And some of those recommendations that came out of this specific needs assessment that I think really align with what we may be looking at with our current target population are listed here. So the first one being prioritize one-time only emergency funds for durable medical equipment, because that was a point that was brought up in this discussion. Explore ways to augment mental health services, specifically to address aging-related issues. So with that in mind, just that mental health care shouldn't be limited to only those who are considered to have severe mental health needs, but it should also be available to those dealing with aging-related mental health challenges that included depression, anxiety, and loneliness, as well as create an intensive care management program specific to the aging population. So that case managers should be skilled in working with complex challenges around medical care and benefits. And then at this time, the Community Engagement Committee was asked to compile demographic data by the COE to possibly bolster gerontology services within the current COE model. So they were asked to also explore collaborations with the LTCC and the Department of Aging. All right. And just to kind of summarize all of this up, which we found in our previous surveys, here are some key takeaways from that, as well as some key themes in the recommendations that we saw. So starting off with the first one, primary medical care, housing, and mental health services did remain the most pressing concerns for this, for what we found. Challenges with benefits and provider turnover appeared frequently in the list of concerns when we look back at these surveys. Technology access and telehealth both have helped and hindered service access, as the participants shared. And we just wanted to pose the question, is there current expertise around HIV and aging and gerontology specifically? Some key themes in the recommendations, specifically when talking about mental health services, just wanting to ensure that mental health services can address aging-related challenges like depression, anxiety, and loneliness, as well as promoting or re-promoting psychosocial support groups. When looking at benefits and resource accessibility in our recommendations, some of the recommendations including ensuring that there's clear and accessible information about benefits. So that was a point of confusion for a lot of folks. And then creating intensive care management programs for the aging population. All right. Any thoughts about this?
Hi, this is Lee. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
So I really appreciate this, and there's a lot of data here. My question is more about what are we going to do about this so we're not duplicating, you know, data that we've accumulated before in the questions that you want to ask for our new initiative. So that I have a question at this point, and I don't have an answer for it. The only thing that I'm thinking about is we can form questions and see if there's been any change in the data that we've already collected, like in your key takeaways. So yeah, for me, it's just more of a question.
Yeah. Part of that, I think, is also working, which we're gonna do in a minute. We're gonna look at the needs assessment survey and kind of go over that tool and see what kinds of questions I think could be important to ask with this in mind, kind of seeing what the key takeaways were, the recommendations and outcomes that came from that, and what maybe the kinds of concerns and issues that we've seen come up time and time again. So yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really important, because if they're happening again and again, then whatever, you know, the care continuum has in place is not addressing people's needs, right? So that's where this can be helpful, I think.
Jose, Jesus, I'm sorry.
Yeah, hi everyone. I'm gonna try to keep it as short as I can. First, thank you to everyone that was involved in the last meeting, and I was not able to be there. Sadly, again, I'm one of those people that is having more mobility issues. On top of the neuropathy and sciatica, it seems like I also have arthritis in my back. You mentioned precisely in some of the elements that they answer in some of the people, it was about mobility. I want to remind everyone that Meredith Green, that she's not in the city with us anymore, she did mention again that none of her clients of HIV long-term survivors, people aging with HIV, was able to pass the balance test. And that tells you a lot about precisely the mobility of the people. I want to remind you also that in Shanti, the HIV group, HIV and aging group, is full. So that already tells you a lot about of the needs already happening. But I think, and sadly, Bill Bloom mentioned that I was from 1 to 6 years ahead of trying to find the answers to these questionings. But the people that have mobility issues, that they are at home, that we haven't been able to reach, but it doesn't mean we cannot keep trying and finding ways in some way, are the people that we're gonna have to try, I hope. And I'm willing to help again. This is like something super important for me, because I'm one of those people, to try to reach these people, because the people that go to certain meetings, certain lunch, whatever, we are still the lucky ones in some way. But there's many, many people at home. I was just wondering also if we had ever in these things collaborated with Open House or 360 in UCSF. But the only other thing that I want to add to all these things that have changed is that some of the most important HIV doctors and a large part of it had become, concierge doctors, and that the shortage of doctors and is part of these new needs for our community. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Jose. Why am I doing that? Sorry, Jesus.
As soon as I tell you, as soon as you don't call me Mary, everything is fine. Jesus, just
no, never, no. I apologize, Jesus.
That's fine.
Anything else for Kara on this? And I understand, Kara, we're going to move on to maybe looking at the process that you're going to use, the questions, the formula?
Yeah.
Possibly. Okay, that would be a good way to balance what we're seeing here.
I'm not sure how much longer I could be on the call, so I wanted to make sure to get this out as far as the survey tool. I guess two things. One, from what Lee said, we actually haven't done a needs assessment, a larger needs assessment for this population for many, many years. So even if we do have the same exact questions that you saw with Randy's, what was that, 15 years ago? Jesus and I were literally just talking about this the other day. It's still going to capture a different population. So I do think it's important that we keep our base questions. A lot of what we saw with the great work that Kira and Kat did in providing an overview, those were questions and snapshots of lives from other communities. So of course they fell within this demographic, but I wouldn't say that the discussion has happened yet. You know, it's been a part of other discussions. They haven't had discussions, by they, I mean us, haven't had these discussions around the basic idea of a person being 65 plus. And I think that could bring out a lot more information. So that's that. So I just want to make sure that we don't, in our effort not to duplicate efforts, that we stray from the idea that, like, but this is a new thing. It might be old questions, but some questions are timeless around isolation, primary care, mental health, all these different things. And the other thing is, I really want to call attention to what Jesus said about mobility. If I'm not here during the review of the survey tool, I would love a question about the survey tool question, but also like a discussion question around mobility and just access in general. Mobility challenges obviously are I wouldn't call it necessarily comorbidities, more of a fact of life when it comes to aging. And a lot of our folks are definitely isolated because of those mobility issues. I've been a actual support to those folks myself, so I know they're out there and they aren't coming to groups like Jesus said. They're often quite isolated at home. So if we could just make sure to add that on. And then one last thing is that please, hopefully everyone here, and then also Franco and Laura and whoever else in this committee can join us next month, because we're going to need to do a brainstorming session of all the different places we're going to reach out to. Of course, Golden Compass. Of course, Open House. Probably Curry Senior Center. But I really want as many minds here to like give Kira directions of like who we should be connecting with. So don't forget, this is only part one of a two-step process before Kira even starts interviewing anyone. Done.
Yeah, Kira, and Kat, please do contact me if there's any area of the whole part of the picture. Is this one for me? It has been the one that maybe I'm more connected and more, involved. So please, even if you see me that sometimes I might not show up, call me or email me or whatever and put me to work somehow.
So, Mark, if I get you, what you're saying is, even so, it's these questions, maybe we haven't done assessment in this demographic for a long time. So the questions we're about to see might have been asked a while ago, but don't be in a hurry to slice and dice them, or in fact, not do that at all, because 15 years have passed and
exactly.
There'll be new relevance.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So you probably want to keep maybe everything that Kira shows you, but you should take into consideration a few things. Well, actually, not really a few things. Take into consideration everything that you just saw. And the things that stood out to you, like maybe you're, so hopefully you still have that document up somewhere. I hope you do. Otherwise you have to remember what you just saw in Kira's overview. And if there are things in there that you felt were important, like for example, what Jesus just said about mobility was if there are things in there, sorry, I'm on hold clearly. Then make sure that you add a question, or transform a question so that it actually connects to that. So again, hopefully you that document, did that document go out in advance, actually? Do people have a copy of that?
No, I can send it out to everyone if Kira can send it over to
Yeah, because I mean
me.
it's kind of, yeah, it's kind of double duty here because she'll be sharing screen, but you should have a copy of that also on your screen, hopefully, so that you while looking at Kira's questions, you keep in mind the issues, you know, per Richard's very solid request, the issues that came up in other COLAs and needs assessments. Does this make sense? You really want to be, that's how you're going to enrich in the survey tool. Yeah? Thumbs up? Okay. So I want to make sure people are understanding me. Yeah? Derek? Jesus? Yeah. Okay, good. I think those were yeses. They're smiles at least. Okay. Thank you. Sorry. I just know that my time here is limited because as soon as my doctor picks up, I'm getting this call. So I just wanted to say all of that before the review happened. Sorry, Kira, for talking so much.
No, it's okay. Yeah, so first I wanted to show you a tool. So this is a survey that we use to our survey tool for the long-term survivors COLA. And so I wanted to share that one first. So let me bring that up. All right. Oops, sorry. And so this is what our long-term survivor COLA survey looked like. So we had just like a brief introduction of who we are and what folks are getting when they complete this survey. And then these are more, our survey usually consists of demographic questions. So it's a two-part survey. This is one part of it. So this is the actual survey, sit-down survey that someone would come in and fill out. And so it asks folks what their age is, what their race is, current gender identity, how long they were living with HIV. And then important to note that in this specific COLA survey, we did ask question number six for folks. So that was different than the rest of our normal COLAs. Because again, each one is kind of tailored to the group that we are going to be asking folks. So yeah, so this one asked when you seroconverted, what treatments were available? And then it goes on to ask about Hep C treatment. And then we go back to kind of our normal basic questions that we will ask. So if folks had a problem, have had a previous problem with substance use, accessing treatment, being incarcerated, experiencing mental health challenges, accessing mental health services, feeling like they had appropriate or sufficient information to access services. And then feeling like they had an effective, trusted support system. So this is one of our shorter surveys. So that's one part of it that I wanted to kind of show folks. And then I can show folks the actual survey that we can look at. So I won't be able to see folks. So if you have any input, please just go ahead and speak. So this is kind of what our survey currently looks like. So this is just the basic outline of what the survey currently looks like. This, of course, this is where you really want, we want to have your input as to what kinds of questions you would like to see on this survey that we would be asking folks. Just any important information that you think would help specifically for this population. So again, some of our basic questions: what's your age, current gender identity, sexual orientation, how long they've been living with HIV, whether or not they're engaged in medical care, and when was the last time they saw their medical care provider. And this was a new question we are now including in our template, which we've used for our recent one as well, that if they haven't seen their medical care provider, What was the reasoning as to why? Where they currently receive their prime medical care? If in the last 12 months they failed to take their meds for any of the following reasons? If they feel they have effective support in maintaining their med adherence? Whether they're virally undetectable? And this is a really important one, I think, specifically for this population, whether they're dealing with any additional diagnoses or chronic illnesses. And then to just check which ones those are. Where they receive their medical insurance / health coverage. If they feel they have adequate information or support in accessing medical insurance or financial benefits. Their primary source of income. Their monthly income number, their current living situation, and then if they are currently homeless, for how long they've been homeless, if they're currently experiencing food insecurity, and then that is followed up by, do you have access to a kitchen or the ability to store and prepare food? A very basic question, what county they live in? Whether they've been incarcerated, and when the last time was, if they were incarcerated. If they're currently or have ever experienced mental health challenges, and this includes depression and anxiety. And then have you ever accessed mental health care? Would you describe yourself as ever having a problem with substance use? And the last one being, have you ever accessed substance use treatment? So do folks have any ideas of more specific questions they'd like to see on this survey? I know Mark mentioned one regarding mobility, question around that.
Yeah, this is Lee. Did you include race in there, in your demographics?
There should be one. But no, we didn't. Oh my gosh. Okay, I will add that.
Make sure you add race, because that will be really interesting, because we often receive, as you know, feedback about people not being able to access services or a barrier to services because of their race. And then secondly, I didn't notice if you had Sutter as a place where people are accessing services. I would recommend adding Sutter because it's a major medical provider.
It's listed, it might be, maybe I should, because it is listed here under Kaiser / CPMC.
Oh, I see.
Slash
okay,
Sutter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Then lastly, under working, you might want to differentiate whether it's full time or part time.
You also might want to consider, because we are talking about 60 plus sort of folks, adding something about meaningful activity that could be connected with the working set of questions.
Whether they have, they're engaged in a meaningful activity?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that also, what Derek just said, that. And I like questions 12 and 13, especially just for instance, I've for around 3 years now, I've been a peer support volunteer with Shanti. And I won't break anonymity, but my client is severely isolated, of that age, HIV. And so maybe a question, if you could form something around, like Derek said, about constructive social activity or connections. He's severely isolated with mobility issues, and also about transportation. Getting to medical appointments when he does have them is a odyssey. It's either Uber or cab drivers aren't treating them well. Maybe how this, you could ask folks, how are you getting to appointments? Is that difficult for you? Or something like that. Is around transportation, maybe. I it seems difficult, at least in my client's situation, and especially the part Derek said about just that isolation. And you know, you make a couple of suggestions about strut or other drop-ins, and people just can't get to those. What do they do?
That's great. I just have to say, I want to. I see that Jesus has their hand up. I'm sorry to just jump in. I don't know if you've talked about the mobility question, but that would be almost a good paired question. So like a question about how would you rate your mobility? And then after that, what are your transportation needs? How do you use transportation with a list of things like, you know, bus, Lyft, what have you? I can go over that more with Kira one-on-one, but that sounds like a great thing. I mean, I think those are two things that really lead to isolation if there aren't any services intact for that particular person.
And I know some folks, my client and some others, they're struggling with insurance, not wanting to, and they qualify, not wanting to pay for electric mobility assistance instruments and, you know, getting hassled about walkers. You know, there's a lot of insurance stuff, but I'm getting a little tangent here, but those were my suggestions. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So Carrie, you and I will talk about that some more, about like what are the different options we could put down. But I think definitely include those two questions. You know, that includes something like paratransit, et cetera. Sorry.
Jose,
Wow.
Hey, Sue, I keep seeing the J, and I just left the class and I sit next to a gentleman named Jesus. It's Jose at school. I'm having a lot of trouble today.
Call me Papi or me.
No, I'd love to call you Papi. No, I'm sorry, Jesus.
Hijo, in that way, you will not forget.
No, so, in this age of Trumpism, my cultural humility is not that bad.
I always tell people again, Jesus is the father, Jesus is the son, so Joseph is the father. So,
Papi, please, your hand is up. Go next.
One of the things that we have to be careful, of course, when of course we want to ask so many questions because this is so important, but the more questions that we have, and I'm the first one saying that, sometimes the more difficulty of someone that might want to answer everything. So let's be a little bit careful with that. Saying that, I wrote a few notes, Kira, on the chat. From my part, also, I don't know if I saw the part of, do you have, especially a certain nation with mobility issues, do you have a social worker or a visitor from any of the agencies? Because this again affects a lot our mental health and our loneliness and the concept of demoralization. I will add also in my case, because it will say a lot about a lot about culture and race, what is your primary language? Because right now, for example, the Mayan community is experiencing a lot of more HIV cases, and they don't even have services, you know, in many different ways. But also, it will say a lot about the Latino community. Anyway, thank you, guys. Jesus, by the way.
Thank you, Jesus. Mark, you...
I really wish I could figure out how to change that from a tan hand, which my hand truly is tan, back to that bright yellow, because I feel it doesn't pop enough. How do I do that? Anyway, that wasn't my question. But if someone knows how, please let me know. So this is not the same. Kira, sorry, I missed like a 20-minute block. This is not the same survey tool as the one you just did before, right? Like I assume major differences between that past one?
Yes.
Okay, great. Because I wouldn't want to see actually like the ACT question. I don't think that's necessary at this point. Or there's a Hep C specific question. I much prefer this list. Okay, I just want to double check on that one.
Yeah.
How many questions total? Like speaking, considering like what Jesus just said. Okay, 27 questions. Jesus, do you think 27 questions? Questions is too much? Like, what do you think is like a good number?
And let's go now again with the fact of being realistic. Any person, especially from any of our communities, they're gonna show up if you give them food or a card, you know, a gift card. We know that by now. So without those elements, it had to come to our own PR and reminding of people of the importance of these questions and how we're going to do it. I'm willing to help again, and depends on also
How do you want to set up this questioning? Are we going to do it only?
Oh, so in different ways. Let me stop you right there.
Yeah,
in
yeah.
different ways, and Kira, correct me if I'm wrong, but this can happen in person or over the phone. During groups, they will also have a copy to fill out prior to the qualitative discussion. Is that correct, Kira?
Yeah, so we do actually, it has happened in a lot of our previous mm-hmm. focus groups and one-on-one interviews where somebody comes in saying, you know, I can't really read this, or, you know, my eyesight isn't so good. So that's when we work one-on-one with them, which where it's really nice to have both me and Kat there, because while I'm leading the group, she can be helping folks individually or vice versa. So
and
we do help, yeah. There are options. And then there's also, like you mentioned, Mark, there is an in-person thing, but it's also, we do over the phone and over Zoom. And over the phone, when I'm interviewing someone, I'm reading them these questions.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, and so I think that the goal here, Jesus, is for us to try to connect with people in whichever way is going to be best for them. Per Kira's suggestion, Kira and Kat, maybe Kat had some voice in that too, I don't remember. We upped the incentive to quite considerably. These are all incentivized as well. People will be, what was it, $50? Do we do
yes.
it that high? Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now
going back, Mark.
No take backs.
That's good.
But before I move to Derek, yeah, as someone who in life, I was homeless and all, who has taken a lot of incentivized surveys, $50 definitely will get people to the table. And from the look of these questions, I know you're going to work with people one-to-one that need help with eyesight and things like that, but this doesn't look onerous at all. As far as a person taking, I know everyone's different, but I've taken a lot of these over the years, and I was pressed and distant, and this one doesn't look difficult. It's very manageable. I'm just speaking for myself, but it looks okay. One other thing, is there anything in here about food security?
There is, I believe, two questions about.
Okay, because food's a deal.
Are you
okay? Yeah, thank you.
And then whether they have access to a kitchen or ability to store and prepare food.
Okay, and another of our senior advocates, Derek.
Hey, thanks. I have a few things as well. Thanks for getting to me. I also put a few things.
I didn't mean
in
that you
chat.
Were a senior, Derek. I meant that you advocate for seniors. I hope
thank
you got
you.
That. All right.
Thanks for that. Though, you know, I'm there. And I put a couple of things in chat. I really do hope that that we would use the same set of questions and that you will revisit the folks that had done this previously, the folks that was that were the participants on your list, because I think it would be an excellent way of tracking changes as well, like from individuals that had taken the report in the past, and we're updating the information as an add-on to the other sets of folks, particularly when we're looking at 60 plus. And as we're looking at this set of folks that are 60 plus, there's a reality of just like you wouldn't think that people at 15 and 25 are going to have the same needs or are looking at the same set of services as people that are in their 30s and 40s. I think when you hit like the 60 plus sort of age set, there's a different set of how people are looking at their worldview. And that's the reason why I added if we could add a question about preparation for death and dying. And it could be as simple as have you done, you know, are you aware of resources or have you completed power of attorney? Medical directive, these sort of things. are really important. That I'm finding from people that are 60 plus, that really isn't as much of a conversation, even folks in their 50s or in 40s. As well, the issue of wellness, aging with wellness, is a real concern, and what that looks like. And so I'm wondering if a question around, and I'm trying to craft it in my head, something around the thing of we were talking about medical care. So what is yours, you know, do you have a self-care routine? And is it an active self-care routine? Or even we can ask it, do you have a self-care routine that's active or passive? And just leave it at that. Like, people don't have to explain it or anything like this. But just this idea of getting an idea of how people are caring for themselves is as important as well. And of course, like, I think the polypharmacy also becomes a big issue as people enter in their 60s and 70s. So, and that could go into the medical care piece.
Good point, Derek. Mark.
As you can see, I was able to figure it out because of Kat. Thank you, Kat. Look at that nice, bright yellow hand. So a couple things. So my comment wasn't about this survey. My comment was with response to Derek's comment about following up with people. I mean, first of all, that was like 15 years ago. So I don't know if that like is even possible. It might be a little depressing, if you know what I mean. But those were anonymous. Like, Randy, I'm sure, did an anonymized survey. So there's no way we can actually go back and try to reconnect with those folks. However, looking at Jesus's, I do think it would be interesting to have the potential to follow up with people, say, 3 years later, 5 years later. So I'm wondering if a question can be, I mean, but we can't assume that. So I think the question should be, can we add your contact information for potential follow-ups? And if they do, then we'll get it. Many people will probably want to be anonymous. Many people probably are like, no, I'm definitely open book. So I kind of love that idea because it does make this like sort of the gift that keeps on giving, right? If we keep on checking in with folks. And Derek, that was a great question. It's just around end of life. We just need to frame it well in a way that's like not, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, that's a tough topic. You had a good phrase in there. What can you repeat that phrase? I want to make sure that I get it, that Kira gets it.
Sure. And so it's much more around the resources and activities that people are doing when they're addressing their dying care. So do you have these documents prepared?
You had another one. It was another
planning, the medical directive.
Polypharmic care.
I don't think they're going to know that word, polypharmic. No. I don't know that word.
I wouldn't think that to use that term.
I wrote down death and dying as well as aging with wellness.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know if you could be like, so my question is death and dying. Have you thought about it? No. Like,
well,
like
there again, it's more around, I get that.
Or, and you just like look at your watch.
We just have to find the right phrase.
Well, Eric had the right phrase, but we're all as a group forgetting it. Like, he just,
are you aware of, you know, and then that area right there, what people do when, and you guys come up with the wording there, but how to
I'm
take
trying care to do it now affairs. Though with the group. Like, what is the, like, what is like,
we have the recording of this, so we can listen to it.
Oh, that's right. Thank you.
Hello.
True. All right, so that'll be homework for Kira. Please repeat what Derek said.
Tend to me and I can listen to it.
Because he had a good phrase that, like, he listed a couple different phrases, and there was one in there that was very clearly like asking about this question, but it was doing it maybe in a more empathetic way.
That's so. An important question, because I live at 55 Laguna, and at 65 and 75 and 95, whenever they have someone from an organization show up about how to do those end of life papers and things like that, they're very well attended. They're very well attended here by my neighbors. I was wondering, Mark, so this 65 plus with HIV has been voted on by the council. That's going to be our needs assessment. What are next steps?
Well, we need to finish this review of the survey tool, and then next month, unless people consider this finished, I don't know if there's been any editing, really. I think there's been additions. And then the next step is next month's meeting is to like get us a list of who we should be reaching out to. I certainly expect you, like the folks on this call, to also be of support to this. I mean, you all have your networks. You all, if you don't have networks, you have individual, you know, who will fall into this. Obviously, Jesus has a big network. Derek literally facilitates groups around this. So we'll be leaning on folks here, but also like, you know, give us agency names and contact information. I already mentioned Golden Compass. Jesus mentioned Open House. I threw out Curry Senior Center. Like that'll be the next step, Richard, is the agency contact. But you know, we can cast this net wide because 65 plus is all over the city across all kinds of service providers.
Stupid question.
And then, one moment. And then, so after we get that brainstorming session down, it's on. Kira and Kat can proceed to start whenever they want. Yes, Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, you guys mentioned advanced care planning, but it's
advanced care planning. I think that was it.
He wrote it. but it is mentioned that way. But when somebody dies, automatically the government pays for cremation or anything like that, or
yes, no. If there's no person or no service to pay for it, the city will pay for it. The person is considered indigent at that point.
So like if I don't have to pay right now, who will pay for me?
They'll store your body until there's enough bodies, and then they burn all the bodies.
Serious?
And burn
really?
Them.
That's how it goes? Wow.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
So
that's
check,
in most
check,
jurisdictions.
Check the chat. I've given you some ideas there, plus a link for Glassroom.
Oh, awesome. Thank you, Lee. Great.
All right. So if people feel pretty comfortable with what the suggestions they've given, I think this is a lot of good suggestions to kind of go off of and see what we come up with.
I
so
do.
I'll go ahead.
Tita, do you have the picture, you know, pictures of the chat? In the chat, there's a lot of stuff from different people too.
Pictures of, sorry.
Oh, the chat. In the chat, there's different suggestions from different people.
Oh,
yeah,
the chat. Yes.
Just telling
and
you
I
to
can
check
see
the chat.
Is a do we get the chat alongside?
Yes. Get,
the,
yes.
Okay, great.
We get chat transcripts. So we have those recorded as well. Oh, yeah. Wow, a lot of chat activity.
And are we doing this one more time, did you say?
No. Next month, it'll probably be a much shorter discussion. It'll just be asking folks to tell us what agencies, besides, like I said, like there's people here in this room who have connects to either agencies or to networks. We're going to be leaning on Jesus and Derek in particular as people who have networks in either a net like Jesus, a network in place, or Derek, support groups that he facilitates, or vice versa. Derek, I'm sure, has a network too, and I'm sure Jesus has connections to support groups as well. So
yeah.
It can't just be all about Derek and Jesus are our right and left arms. We want to be able to go across to other places too. So next month, Lee, we're just coming up with places to go to. So brainstorm. Obviously, we have our, like I mentioned a couple times now, we have our usual suspects, Golden Compass and Open House, but we know there's more, you know? And
yeah,
it doesn't it doesn't just have to be senior serving. It could be a place where you feel like actually a lot of seniors go here, even though it's not a specifically senior services agency. And then
I was just asking because I think, you know, we have a couple of members, a few members that aren't here, and they may
Exactly.
weigh in. So make sure that they're sent this information. So if they want to weigh in, they can.
Oh, that's a great idea. So then, Kira, after you and I eventually meet again to review sort of how you've updated the survey tool, please do send it out to Franco and Laura. Those are people with opinions for sure and expertise. And that's a great reminder. Thank you, Lee.
Right. Well, thank you, everyone. That was a lot of good work. Thank you, everyone. Input, initial work by Kira and Kat. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys.
I
Nice.
Can I ask the group something? Actually,
Yeah.
I was unable to be here when Steven spoke, and I doubt he spoke on this, but maybe just from the group expertise, we received this is a, I think an appropriate committee to talk to about it. Although I will be bringing it more to Bill Bloom. We received a comment on our website that UOP Dental Services is not providing services to anyone who has a detectable viral load. Is that true? Is that something any of you have heard? Is this just a rumor that was posted to our website? You know, we have a public comment field.
I had a cleaning yesterday, as a matter of fact. I've been with UOP for around 3 years. I am undetectable, but that's never come up with me. I have heard people talking about other things, but never viral load with
Yeah,
their
I mean, we get a
dissatisfaction.
complaint about UOP about once a month. I hate to mention service categories, but it's what is, I mean, service agencies and not categories, but they're literally naming this agency to us, so I feel like I kind of have to. Okay, has anyone else heard this? I mean, I don't want to chase a rumor, but that's kind of, that would
No,
be.
but I wonder if it's a normal question. I just came from the dentist and I was gonna have a tooth pull out and he say, how is your viral load and your T cells? So what will happen if I say, well, I have a
High viral load right now. I
oh,
used to be
I'm
undetectable,
sure
but
they're
now
gonna
I'm
say
quite detectable.
maybe we're gonna have to wait or something. So maybe it is something happening. So just like that.
Okay.
But that could
Have you
just
heard?
be a general care question.
It could be. It could
Yeah,
be.
yeah.
I would definitely follow up with Bill to follow up with them.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to assume things, right? But at the same time, like if this comment is not about a general question, which that makes sense as a general question, right? A viral load impacts how your immune system will function, and your immune system is getting hit during a lot of dental care. I know mine is.
So, Mark,
But if that's connected to denial of services or even suspension of services until the viral load is cleared, I think we just need some clarification. Derek, sorry.
It could be from the same person, actually, but I have heard that from someone fairly recently.
Yeah.
And the rationale was exactly the rationale that you had just stated, which is there was a concern about, what if, they're cleaning their teeth and something happens and infection and all this sort of thing.
Oh, okay. So it might be like more probationary rather than like this is something that, okay, not probationary, but you know what I mean. Like it's a caution that they, okay.
Yeah, but
Like,
the standards of care should take care of that. This should not be an issue.
yeah, it should be a non-issue. Maybe it just needed some clarity for that particular patient, right? Maybe they didn't understand what was happening. Nevertheless, I'm gonna follow up with the standards of care. Actually, I can look that up now that we have some nice bright new ones that Robert put together last year. And if it's not listed on the standards of care, I'll just talk to Bill directly. Thanks.
Okay. So
Thank you, Mark.
I think that might be it for us. Our next meeting is March 5th. Before we go, talking about HIV and aging, I'm 62 with HIV. Can I regale you with more medical woes? You know that I had my appendix out 5 weeks ago. 2 nights ago, I noticed a movable lump on my belly button that wasn't there before. And it was brand new that day. I said, "Oh no, I thought it was tied into the surgery." But that's all healed. So I kind of panicked, but I went to general again at 8 o'clock at night, and they kind of got me right in the back room because I had surgery. I'm on their record, and they looked at it and felt it and kind of started smiling. I was like, "What?" And they go, "No, Mr. Sullivan, it's got nothing to do with your appendix coming out. You now have what's known as a very minor, but a reducible umbilical hernia."
Is it not a pregnancy? You're not pregnant?
I said, what? So they go, yeah, and the treatment is whenever you feel it pop out of the lining, you pop it back in. I said, wow, that's not too scientific. They said, well, that's, you have a very small one, but you have an umbilical hernia. It's called a reducible for just that reason. You can basically tuck it back in. Our guts are basically wrapped with saran wrap. There's a little nick, and once in a while, the intestine pops through. So you can go home now. And I'm like a car. I mean, headlights are getting broken. Hubcaps are falling off. Spring cushions are popping.
Richard, be careful
about
that.
So that's my medical woe.
I would say do not.
Lee's had enough.
All right, everyone. Sorry. Thank you for listening.
All right. Sorry, all right, Derek,
really fast, Richard. I just want to say, like, I hope they're not going to leave it like that.
Yeah.
So they said should repair a hernia. It usually works out itself. This is a very minor one. It popped in that once, and I haven't seen it since. And they said if it gets worse, which we really doubt, they can do a mesh thing down the line, but it seldom gets to that. So.
Yeah, Richard, the same thing happened to me. I don't know if they would call it an umbilical hernia, but it was like a very minor. After I had one of my kidneys removed, I also had this like, well, what is this fucking shit now? Yeah. Is this recording? I'm just being real. And I went to the doctor and they're like, yeah, it's this kind of hernia. Look, I can push it and it's gone. I'm like, okay, but it's going to pop up again. And actually, that's never did. So
thanks for letting me share. I hate to be a hypochondriac,
but
the nurse ended by saying,
Richard,
no,
Richard,
she called me 007.
Richard.
I said, what? She goes, you look just like Daniel Craig. Richard. So it made all my pain go away.
Richard, wow, I just want to say, remember what I said though. Like, it's like it could just truly go away. I mean, but yeah. if it does, so I wouldn't overthink it like I did. Like I really overthought it for like a week, and like I was just like,
no, I'm good with it now. The once I saw the simplicity of it, it's all good.
And also,
like I said,
it sounds like what Derek mentioned. Like, if it doesn't go away, they can do it like a fairly minor surgery to put a mesh in and to handle that. No one should have some like thing just popped out of their belly. No, it's not appropriate.
Telling my dinner date. Oh, hold on.
Yeah, it's gonna pop this fucker back.
Let's get some dessert. All right, everyone. See you on the line sooner or later on another group.
Bye, guys. Thank you
Bye,
for
everyone. Thank you.
Guys. Ciao, ciao.
Can the two of you stay on?